Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer, Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening.
And this week, Fee and I are in conversation with Emily McMeekin and Annabelle Rifkin. Emily, Annabelle, you both bring a stellar background and body of work in journalism, but in 2016, you also launched an online platform, The Midult, and then a brilliant podcast called I'm Absolutely Fine, both of which you've previously described as conversations around the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up. And I particularly love the description of rummaging through the handbags and emotional knicker drawers of various extraordinary people. A quick note to add that in 2018, you published your hugely popular book with a seal of endorsement from Claudia Winkleman, amongst others. So we'll link to that in the show notes and mention it further down in the chat as well. But firstly, what I love about The Midult is how searingly honest you've both been since day one. And one thing that comes up time and time again is anxiety. So forgive me for going quite deep very early on here, but this is such a hot topic, especially for women in their 40s plus. So I'm curious to know how, over the years, what you have found that really works for anxiety, if anything, whether specific products or specific people. And as a side note, Emily, I know that you suffered terrible panic attacks and that you've been very open about this, along with your decision to take medication and go into therapy, which I think too few of us actually do in the UK, therapy. So can we kick off with anxiety, and perhaps you can both link your thoughts and ideas and hopefully tips into another big theme that you both cover so well, which is insomnia.
Oh, Sophie, you're asking all the big, difficult questions today, aren't you?
Straight in there.
I mean, she's an absolute badass, Emily. I think that what we found was we were sort of looking for the grown-ups. There had been this expectation that the worry of youth would subside and it would be replaced by a sort of unassailable emotional equilibrium and control, and you would become somehow numb, and if not, you had failed. And there we were in our 40s. The V shows, doesn't it? The V goes down and shows your happiness descends to the bottom of the V in your mid-40s, and the anxiety mountain goes up and you hit the peak of the anxiety in your 40s. And in terms of, I mean, Emily may have a different point of view, but for me, we could talk about meditation, we could talk about anti-anxiety drugs, we could talk about yoga. I loathe yoga, but that's for another podcast. Really, for Emily and I think, the biggest balm was connection. Because there was a certain shame around anxiety, like, I'm privileged, why aren't I happy? And we just thought, you know, if you just, shame's a wriggly little monster, if you look it straight in the eye, if you cast light upon it, it can't survive. So that's why we thought we will treat how are you as a question and just not always say, I'm absolutely fine.
Yes, it's I'm absolutely fine, but, which hence the podcast. But as Annabelle said, when we first started wanting to work together, originally we were going to do a kind of platform called Ask Annabelle, because I basically ask Annabelle, and everyone we know asks Annabelle everything. It's like, Annabelle, what do you think about this? Annabelle, what do you think about this? And then so we had a series of kind of dinner parties with wonderful women to start thinking about themes for what we were trying to do. And the biggest connector was anxiety. It came in all kinds of different flavours. So it was, I don't want to have sex with my husband, or I want to have more sex with my husband. I'm worried about money. I lie in bed listening to the kind of drip of my thoughts, brain, leaky ceiling, whatever it is. And that was the sort of the idea that this was the glue that kind of held us or didn't, or sort of that we were kind of all vibrating with. And that the moment we started talking about it, everybody felt better.
And I love, by the way, the word connectivity, because increasingly in this social media age, it feels like we're less connected and we want to be more connected. And I love that you're normalizing these things as well. So you've spoken at length about your relationships with alcohol, and this really chimes with me because I've been doing a lot of reflecting on how I used to drink before I became unwell last year. And very interestingly, it's been psilocybin that's enabled me to knock it on the head almost completely, which makes sense because, Sophie, as you explained on our microdosing episode, psilocybin is actually anti-addictive, but that's a whole other podcast. But Emily, I believe you went sober just after your 30th birthday and then you met your husband. Would you mind talking to us about this? And also, can you recommend any non-alcoholic drinks brands? What are you ordering at the bar or drinking at home?
Yeah, I gave up drinking at 31. So my 30th birthday is a birthday I probably have forgotten for obvious reasons. And I drank in a kind of way as to hide the anxiety. And it became self-perpetuating because the more hungover I was, the more I had anxiety, and it just went on and on and on. And I thought, just before I turned 31, I thought, my God, there's got to be something that is going to make me feel better. And maybe I'll just do one thing. And that one thing was go to a meeting and to stop drinking. And it was almost immediately life-changing, which is amazing. But the difficulty I had was that I was 30 and everybody was out partying and drinking, and there was none of this conversation. I mean, I'm so thrilled for people who stop drinking now, or even in the last 5-6 years, because the conversations around sobriety are so normalized. It's absolutely amazing for people, I think, to see on Instagram people sharing how long that they haven't had a drink or what their sort of alternatives are and whatever. I mean, and that includes actually, as you are hinting at, the kind of non-alcoholic section of drinks, which is now, when I gave up, it was literally elderflower presse, that's it, you're done. See ya. Yeah. Which was fine. And I'm ever grateful for all those elderflower presse. Or it was sort of Coca-Cola and you'd be higher than everybody else there. And I used to challenge bartenders actually to make me the sort of most extravagant non-alcoholic drink that they could have. But of course, it had so much sugar in it that I would be up for days.
I just did that. This hopefully at the time of recording will sound quite relevant, but I've just come back from You, Me, Bum, Bum train. Does that mean anything to you?
Oh my God, lucky you.
And I said to the barman at the end, what's your most exciting non-alcoholic drink that you've got? And it was water. Anyway, we digress. Please carry on.
But it's often water. And yeah, exactly. And I did the entirety of wedding season. Everybody got married around 33, 34, 35. I was sober and all I drank was elderflower presse. Anyway, now, actually, some lovely woman who listens to the podcast called Louise Avery messaged me and said, I listened to your podcast. I have a kombucha non-alcoholic brewery called LA Brewery. Please try my kombucha. And it is the most amazing non-alcoholic offering. And
is that the one in the pretty bottle that you're basically addicted to?
Basically, yes. I've swapped one thing for the other, but at least it's good for my gut. It's low calorie and it's non-alcoholic. So, I mean, I do everything very addictively. So, you know, but it is brilliant. It's a woman-run, woman-found business, all the things I love, and it's delicious, and it doesn't make you feel that you've basically inhaled the sugar jar, which is really great.
Sophie, don't you have a friend or you know somebody that does Liars, which
is
amazing?
Yeah, really brilliant non-alcoholic spirit brand.
See, my problem is with the, and this is, I think, maybe just a, it's, I don't know about all people who sort of have an issue with alcohol or whatever. I don't like my drinks, my non-alcoholic drinks, to mimic alcohol.
And you don't like the ceremony of mixing them either, do you? The sort of, like the seed lip, a bit like gin over ice and a slice of lemon. You don't like it at all?
No, I don't. I don't want it to. So I wouldn't drink non-alcoholic beer, which I know has saved so many of my friends and they love it or whatever. But I don't, something in my brain kind of triggers. And so, but I'd be very happy to look at Lyle's as long as it doesn't taste like a little bit like gin or a little bit like vodka, because that sort of slightly freaks me out. I know that. I don't know if that's just me, basically.
For me, I quite like a non-alcoholic cocktail. I find I can dip in and out of alcohol, which is quite nice, that if I'm out, I can have one if I want to. But usually I don't. But then it's quite nice for me to have a nice non-alcoholic cocktail instead.
The problem with alcohol, even if you're not an alcoholic, is that just when you really need it in your life, you stop being able to metabolize it. So now, if I want to drink, I have to really cancel the next day and practically be on a drip. And it's and the way that it affects sleep is deeply insidious.
Yeah.
The way everything affects sleep. I mean, that is a lottery. The sort of pick and mix of what you take and whether or not you will sleep.
It's funny, isn't it, how all these things that we enjoy doing when we're young and all of a sudden as we're going out minimising your sleep, drinking as much alcohol as possible, and all of a sudden you get to midlife and you're like, get as much sleep as possible, stop drinking early.
And I feel like it's quite interesting as someone who hasn't drunk basically since they were 31, so like 19 years, is the fact that now so many people don't drink because exactly as Annabelle said, they really struggle to metabolize alcohol, you know, or they can't go out and drink like they used to. So it's quite an odd sensation, actually, because I used to be like one of three people who didn't drink. Now it's sort of like people are like, oh, yeah, I've given. And I'm just like, wow, that's amazing, because I never thought I would ever give up. Do you know what I mean? Whereas for some people, it's just come naturally, that kind of parting of ways.
Yeah, I have to diarize drinking.
Schedule a session.
Like, yes, exactly. Like maintenance sex, you know.
A maintenance session. I love it.
Tell us about your roles as acne aunts at The Telegraph. It's lovely that in the age of social media, that the role of newspaper acne aunts still going so strong.
Well, we used to write a funny mid-alt column. And then we thought, oh, we quite like a change. And what was starting to happen was that we found that our, not on the paper, but through Instagram or through the podcast or through live events that we would do, people were really talking to us. And we'd ask them to fill in the gap. We'd say, can you just tell us, I'm absolutely fine, but... And the things that would come back were extraordinary. And then we'd do sort of live therapy on the stage. We are in no way therapists. But we realised that really all we talked about was feelings. So... we said to The Telegraph, they said, what do you want to do? And we said, what about postcards from the edge? What about that kind of idea? Most women feel that they secretly, that they are just one inconvenience away from madness. And then it broadened. And readers started writing to this. Some were 20, some were 90. And we just do our best. And often the questions that are interesting to answer are the ones that stump us slightly at the beginning, or the ones that we disagree about. Because I think often, if you feel incredibly certain about something, that's when you need to question yourself. So if Emily is certain that she thinks this, and I'm certain that I think that, then usually we can find a middle way through, which is the opposite of automatic thought, catastrophizing and extreme thinking, which we all suffer from. But it really, it's a joy. It's a joy to be able to just try and help and be a little bit lyrical in the process.
We're covering the big topics here, but your book talks about infidelity. And a pull quote that I found says, quote, infidelity doesn't necessarily mean it's over. Contempt does. So interesting. Do you want to also elaborate on this? Because it feels to me like a very modern day Esther Perel philosophy. It seems that for some women, divorce could be really destabilizing and working in it might be a viable option. So I'm really intrigued by your thoughts on infidelity.
Well, I think it probably was an Esther Perel quote. It came from somewhere, that, or some therapist. But I think what we realise more and more from doing the column and just living lives and being crones and getting older is that life is all about context, right? For some people, infidelity is going to be the end of days and an absolute horror. I'm sure it's always a hideous betrayal. And for others, not.
Like all of these things, I think it's realising that there isn't one cookie cut fit all sort of path to divorce, path to successful marriage, path anywhere. And I think that's what we're discovering every single moment, every single day, is that we find ourselves standing in the room thinking, what am I doing here? How did I get here? What's next for me? And it seems to be so different from what we imagined when we were younger about the way our careers were going to go, or the way that our kind of lives, you know, the way that we were going to walk into our futures.
We were brought up, Emily, weren't we, with like a combination of rules and ladders.
Yes.
If they cheat on you, it's over. And yeah, you have to climb, 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 climb. And in fact, neither of those things have proved to be true. You know, we were of the generation where you were told that you could have it all, even if a man had his hand up his skirt, and it meant that you had to do it all at the same time. And it was interesting watching Rivals, because I wondered if it was okay to laugh about all that stuff when I'm not sure how much has changed. And that was very much how I was treated as a young woman. So those hard and fast rules are something I've become more and more uncomfortable with, I think because they were sort of mother's milk to me as a younger woman.
Yeah, I know, I completely agree. And I think that doesn't mean that infidelity should be reframed as a good thing in any way whatsoever. But I suppose the idea that contempt is definitely a relationship killer, because it implies that the connection is broken. And that kind of brings us back to the beginning, that the point is that we all need to be connected to each other in order to have kind of fulfilling relationships and friendships. And this is everywhere. Mm. And I suppose that's what we're taking from all that. I mean, when we answer all the problems on the agony column, what's so interesting is that everything comes back down to you need to communicate. So in some ways, I think that's the idea, is to break down, to understand that you may not feel the same way about things that you thought you were told that you would. And that is a big element of midlife. I mean,
it we've is,
talked
isn't
a,
it?
Yeah. a lot about this on with guests on the podcast about how you reach your 40s and the rules that you set yourself when you were 15 or that were set for you when you were 15, the values, etc., you'll look around and you go, oh, I'm sorry, this is not how I feel about things like that anymore. And that is such a shock to the system. And I think that's probably what causes a lot of the panic and anxiety. It's like, well, I've done everything that I should. I've done everything the way that I should do it. But
yes, I've been a good girl.
I've
been a good girl. I've behaved myself. I haven't been too cross. I haven't made a fuss. And now, oh, it's, why is it not working? But, you know, what we would say is sort of embrace the fertile void and flail about for a bit and something will come.
Completely agree.
Before we get on to a few of our more quickfire age well themes, I'd love to pick up on something else from your book, which again is about relationships, but of the more platonic kind. So you've also said that if someone has no old friends, there's a problem. I'm inclined to agree that if somebody can't hold on to friendships, this could be a red flag. But what are your general thoughts on friendships? I'd also love to know what you think about the Harry quote from When Harry Met Sally, that straight men can't have platonic friendships with straight women as they always want to have sex with them.
There's a theory, isn't it, that men meet women and immediately wonder what they look like with their clothes off. But I would argue, even if that's true, don't know, I'm not a man, I've never been a teenage boy, I don't know, but why can't you be friends with someone who wonders what you look like without your clothes on? Mm. You don't have to have sex with them, you can still wonder about it. So that's never crossed my mind before, but I suppose that's what I think about that. What do you think, Em?
I also sort of think it doesn't really matter. I'm trying to think about, I don't have that many straight male friends that are mine anymore, which I see as a little bit of a sadness, actually. And I've got lots of single male friends, but they're my husband's friends. So you're probably much better. You have lots of straight single male friends who are wonderful, Annabelle.
Yeah, and if they look at me and wonder, great, and if they don't, thank God. But it hasn't stopped us from having a laugh for the last 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, or sometimes it's the case that guys get married and then that's going to change the relationship, because occasionally wives might be suspicious of a friendship that they have with a straight woman. And it's a very, again, a whole other podcast, it's a very complicated area. Right.
Again, about context, when and if and how that might happen. But in terms of people having old friends, I mean, again, I look back on that quote from the book and I feel something akin to shame. I feel like, Emily, we were very absolute. And I think the thing is these are probably being taken out of context and they were part of great big long lists where we were playing with ideas. But I suppose that most of the women that I am very close friends with have got friends from when they were 4 or younger, and then another lot at 11. Another lot about 17, maybe some university ones, first job ones. And it becomes a cumulative thing. At the same time, there'll be a shedding. But I think that certainly most of the people that I love and respect and whose friendship I value have got those notches on the friendship post, as it were.
Yeah, makes sense. Same here. Right, quick fire. Tell us about your skincare.
Quick fire. Yeah. Oh, God.
Tell us all about your skincare routines. We're switching lanes here very rapidly. Any lotions, potions, any product recommendations, any brands? What's on the bathroom shelf, basically?
Well, I was a beauty columnist for 12 years. So I sort of tried everything, knew everything. And then I stopped writing a beauty column a couple of years ago. And it's all, much as I miss things about it, it's a bit of relief to not be thinking about peptides and acids and what should I and what shouldn't I. So I've really, really, really streamlined. So I use a device that you may or may not have heard of called the Lima Laser. So I use that pretty much every day. And I use the Lima Skincare as well because it's optimized for the laser light. And then I'm very into cleansing balms. So old school Elemis collagen balm, I'll use, what's it, I can't remember exactly, Pro Collagen Marine Balm, I think it's called. Or Green Clean, another balm. And that's really the beginning and the end of my skincare routine now.
Mm, streamlined indeed. Yeah, what about you, Emily?
Well, I'm sort of incompetent and Annabelle has tried and we have done kind of 4 years of 5, 6 years, 8 years of the podcast and whatever, and she's tried to direct me and I'm still useless. So I just use CeraVe. I use Skin and Me in the evening, which is a subscription cream, and I use Nivea Soft. I mean, literally, it's like a sort of, lowest possibly maintenance thing. Mm. But I also have a Lima Laser, which I love. So
I tell you what I would highly recommend is a product called Future Dew by Glossier. Glossier is a funny brand because we all think that it's being used by women in their 20s. But actually, because it's so pared down, it's very good for women in their 40s and 50s who maybe don't want to layer on the pancake in the same way. And it's an oil serum hybrid. And you put it on under your tinted moisturizer, under whatever your concealer, your foundation, whatever you might put on next. And it just makes you completely radiant. People always comment. And it's about 25 quid. It's not bad. Yeah. But I buy it for people. I think it's that good.
Why don't we talk about treatments and tweakments? Have you had anything? Would you have anything?
Emily?
I'm afraid, again, it's like asking a toddler. I'm really sorry. I feel like I have a blob on the side of my nose. And I went to, when I worked at Tatler, there's something called the Tatler Cosmetic Beauty Guide. And they were like, okay, well, we can send you to go and have your blob looked at by this amazing plastic surgeon. And I can't remember her name, but she was absolutely wonderful. This is a few years ago. And I said, I really hate my blob. She's like, okay, I can see your blob. It's fine. It's not a dangerous blob, but I can see, you know, and you know how one becomes fixated about parts of your face that are just wrong in your head. I would have to have a mini operation, and it would cost about $4,000 to get rid of my blob. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to live with my blob. Mm. So I'm afraid, yes, exactly. I'll just keep sticking on the Nivea Soft and hope for the best.
Yes, actually, speaking of products, I'm a fanatical believer in eyebrows. I think in terms of supporting the architecture of your face, they are hugely, hugely important. And I think you almost, when they're really good, you almost don't need any other makeup. And I know that sometimes some people pluck them to look like Kate Moss in the 90s, or they've just fallen out. There is a product called RevitaBrow, which really, really works over a period of about 3 months. It really strengthens your eyebrows, and I would recommend that. Then you just go get them threaded, and it's like, Emily, it's really, yours were quite sparse, and now they're amazing.
No, it's been amazing. And then I would also recommend Boy Brow from Glossier, which is a really good, if you're going to even add some definition on top of that, use that.
Yeah, all the Blink products are very good. And I have Botox, baby Botox, really, once every 6 months. About 4 years ago, I suddenly had these huge sausage bags under my eyes. And my eyes are sort of my fortune, and I really minded. And I was like, oh my God, I really mind. And I went to see quite a famous plastic surgeon called Dr. Joshi. And thank God he's as good as he is, because I went, oh my God, I thought, I can't believe I'm in here thinking about actually having an eye job. And plastic surgery worries me, because I think there can be a sort of, when you've redecorated one room in a house, you have to do all the rest and you start to lose your step and you start to forget what you're looking at, and it's difficult. And he prodded me and he said, I'm not sure that's fat. Have you ever had filler? And I said, once. And he said, when? And I said, about 18 months ago. And he said, and when did these come up? And I said, about 18 months ago. Anyway, the filler had migrated from my cheeks up into under my eyes. And I had it dissolved, and they were gone in 24 hours. But if he hadn't been as good as he was, I might have considered surgery. Would I consider a full facelift in 15 years? Maybe, but I doubt I'll be able to afford it.
I have become completely obsessed with Lindsay Lohan's face.
We are all obsessed with Lindsay Lohan's face.
Given I barely cleanse properly, and I certainly, the only thing I do that is constant is dye my hair, because I went white. I'm white now, but I went grey at 25. So
you want what Lindsay Lohan's had, don't you, Em?
But I'm just literally having literally said I wouldn't do anything. I look at Lindsay Lohan's face and I go, that's working.
I think it's a shame that Hollywood women say I look the way I do because I'm ingesting edible collagen, or I'm doing facial exercises. And I just think that's a shame for everybody else.
I agree.
I understand there's shame and there's humiliation and there's the patriarchy, and it's all a nightmare. But it's a sort of lie that hurts other people.
Yeah. We did a really interesting interview with Alice Hart Davis, and we had a great conversation. She's amazing. And she was talking about the fact that the really good work, including filler, you just don't see. And I know that, Sophie, you've spoken about this a lot. So there, and again, another podcast conversation, but we won't go there because we've got more questions to ask you. But thank you for that. Really super interesting. Supplements, what do you take, if any?
I take the Lima supplement, which I think is quite life-changing. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, me too.
It's supposed to help with many, many, many things. The one thing it really helps me with is anxiety. Really helps my mood. It helps a lot of people with sleep. Nothing makes me sleep. It's a complete mystery and an ongoing nightmare. But it does help with mood. I also take iron, and I started recently and going back to visit magnesium glycinate.
And I take vitamin D as well, which I take it like because Annabelle tells me to.
Oh, yes, I take vitamin D. You're quite right. I can't remember why I told you to, but let's keep going.
But the thing I do, which has been the biggest game changer in terms of my wellness journey, and I'm going to keep this really short because besides giving up alcohol, because Annabelle will kill me.
I know what you're going to say, Emily. Oh my God.
I'm so sorry. I do cold water swim every Saturday morning in the ladies' ponds in Hampstead with some friends. And it is, we were swimming last week, the week before, and it was -4 outside and 2.5 degrees in the water. And I promise you, it's the only time in the week where the voices in my head aren't chattering, where there is literally...
It's because you're battling for your life.
But it's so, it's just so calm. But my battling for my life is very calm. It's extraordinary. All the noise just goes. It's like zoom.
Well, like I think that's it, because they say, a lot of received wisdom says you get the same physical benefits from just plunging your head into a bucket of ice water, but you don't get the same emotional ones, do you? But knowing your day can't get any worse and just focusing on one thing. But presumably the experience changes when you're swimming in the ponds and it's June and it's gorgeous.
Yes, but also somebody said in the ponds that you have these amazing naked conversations with kind of 45-year-old plus women who've been swimming for a long time, and it's just extraordinary. But she says that it's really affected her seasonal affective disorder, because being part of the seasons so viscerally, i.e. you swim when it's cold, you see the ducks, you see the changing leaves, you see everything, you see the ice, then you see the sun, then you see that, it just sort of means that you accept the flow of the year in a way that has really, it means that you don't struggle so much in winter, which I thought was really interesting.
I wonder if my stupid mental health walks have done that as well, you know?
Yes, I think maybe your stupid
pounding around the stupid park, listening to terrible music. I wonder if being closer to nature, even if it's nature in the middle of the city, it's a bit Eckhart Tolle. You look at a flower and you think, okay, there's a flower.
Yeah. Sophie, you did loved your podcast on cold water therapy. It works, doesn't it? It really
works. Yeah, absolutely. And it's something I do, apart from... I started off the year with a bit of a horrible tonsillitis. So while I was actually actively unwell, I didn't cold plunge. But apart from that, I do every day. Yeah, my coldest, I think, was 2.3 degrees.
I think you're a maniac.
It was similar to what you described, where it was about -4 outside. I was out there at 5 a.m. and yeah.
But also, the other thing that... So I swim with a group of women from my neighbourhood, and everybody has different jobs and everybody has different kind of daily experiences. But the one thing that we all say, we've been doing it since January 2021, is that it's made us so brave. Like, if you can get into water that's that cold and override your brain, you can basically do anything. Yes. And I know it's a bit like what Annabelle was saying about your day can't get any worse. You basically say, okay, well, I can cope. Yeah. I can do it.
So you believe in yourself. And by the way, the other thing that we're talking about with your women is connection.
Yes, absolutely.
Again, that will just keep recurring. It'll keep coming up. Anything good that we do.
Mm. Yeah, agree.
Can you describe your relationships with your phones and also any apps that you really love? And how do you find that links in with your memory and brain health?
What memory? I remember nothing. Why am I standing here holding this spoon? So whether that's the phone, whether that's midlife, or, you know, they used to call me Rain Woman because I could take a snapshot of a page and I'd know everything. Mm. And that is no longer true. And whether it's the phone, I really, really, really disapprove of phones, but what are you going to do? What I started doing is putting it on airplane mode at night, because I'm awake through the night so much, always. And if there's new information reaching me, that's deeply unhelpful, because then I'll add panic to the panic about the fact that I'm awake and I'm going to be exhausted.
I love my phone. The amount of things that I can access on my phone that used to take me forever to sort out is just life-changing. I love the fact that I can download podcasts on my phone, which I love because I walk the dog and I listen to all kinds of podcasts and it's fantastic. I love the fact that I can get New York Magazine, which we used to have to wait to arrive by snail mail, and it would be like a month late and I can get it straight away. I love the fact that I can watch Netflix on my phone. I love the fact that I can read my Kindle on my phone. I mean, I'm afraid I am completely the opposite to everyone.
Well,
I'm like,
but generally in life, generally in life, Emily is sunshine and I am brimstone and shadow. So this is just yet another example of her extreme delightful, delicious positivity.
I think I can set reminders. I mean, just
okay,
my diaries
right,
on my
honestly.
Phone. I'm like, it's brilliant. I could do my supermarket shop on my phone.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, we get the idea.
I'm fast getting the realisation that you two are the yin to each other's yang.
Every yin needs a yang.
Of course. So if a woman aged 30s to 40s, which is quite specific, but let's just go with that, or above, actually, 50s, 60s, is coming to London for the first time, where are you sending them? Can you include any hotels, restaurants, but also gorgeous little shops, streets, any hidden gems in London? And apologies for the fact that not everyone lives in London. Many people visit London.
Well, I will say that I work for a digital trends agency and it's relocated to Brick Lane and it takes me an hour and 15 minutes to get there. And I thought, oh my God, I cannot do this. And now I cannot get enough. So I would send you, do not go anywhere else but east, go to Spitfields Market, walk down Brick Lane, get a bagel, go to the vintage shops, see what's happening, look at the graffiti, just enjoy what it is to be in a metropolitan city that is thriving and energized and constantly recreating and constantly remodernizing and constantly looking for its identity. And it is just fantastic. So yeah, that's what I would do.
I mean, a lot of people say that, you know, we can no longer pretend that anything interesting happens west of center. But I suppose I would say go to Portobello Market on a Friday morning at 8:30 and go to the bit that's under the Westway, which is where all the fashion editors and vintage dealers go, if you're interested in vintage clothes, because it's quite overwhelming. But, you know, you roll up your sleeves, you gird your loins and you do the work, you'll find things there. The other road, I would say, once you've done your Portobello Green, then I would wander down just a little bit further to Goulbourne Road. And I would maybe queue at a new restaurant called Cantine, which is an ex-River Cafe chef where you can't book, so you've got to queue, and the food is sensational. If you've been organised, you might have got yourself a table at Straker's, where, again, the food is off the clock. There's a street market. There's Lisboa that's been there forever with the little Portuguese custard tarts. There are vintage shops. There are furniture shops. There's Le Labo. It's a mixture of splashy and shabby, and I really like it.
We had such an amazing lunch there, didn't we, at Christmas? Yeah. It was the most festively lovely at Straker's. We had a 2 o'clock lunch. Was it like a 2 o'clock lunch?
2:30, I think I booked. It was late.
And it was sort of really twinkly and wonderful, and the food was so good. And I was so forever grateful for you for sorting that out, because it was just such a moment.
I mean, it's a treat. It's a treat. But frankly, at the moment, if I'm going to go out to dinner, I might as well go somewhere that's a treat. Because if I go to Pizza Express, it's going to cost me 50 quid. It's all so crazy. You can't justify anything. So you might as well have something sensational.
Totally agree.
How about signature fragrances? Do you both have one?
Yes. I've been wearing Philosophus by Diptyque I was 22, and it's a sort of green fig, so it's not saccharine. I can no longer smell it, so I assume it's as delicious as it always was. I always go back to that, but occasionally I'll break away and use a scent. This is particularly in the mornings if I want to, you know, go brace, brace. There's a fragrance by Miller Harris called So Lemony, they named it twice. And I love that. And there is a new fragrance, which I think is called Catch Me If I Fall. And it was developed by Kathleen Baird Murray, who is an old friend of mine who spent years as the Vogue beauty director and knows everything there is to know about beauty and fragrance. And she developed it using her Burmese heritage as inspiration. And it's just a sort of symphony of orange blossom and bergamot. And I layer it with the lemon to give it a sort of slightly floral dye down. Mm. And so that's my spring morning fragrance. But it's the fig for me always.
Love these perfume tips. Thank you so much. Do you have any complementary or wellness type therapies or therapists? Can you recommend anyone?
I tell you what I would recommend if anybody wanted to dip their toe. Annabelle got me hooked on Pilates. She's slightly annoyed with me about it because I basically 15 years, she was like, you should do Pilates. It's really good. 15 years. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I started doing Pilates and I was like, Annabelle, Pilates is great.
Oh my God, infuriating.
She's just like, this is how I'm going to feel when you finally come to the ponds with me and have a moment.
I will, when it's really warm. But I do Pilates on a reformer. I'm tortured on a machine and it's weighted and it's not boring, so there's a bit of kit. You know, I really, really cannot tolerate a yoga class. Everything about it makes me feel mental and sort of almost violent. But if you give me something with bells and whistles and springs and weights and pulleys, then I feel like it's really doing the job.
So if you were mentioning this to me and somebody else, was it Caroline Barnes? People are talking about reformer Pilates all the time.
Yeah, I love reformer. I exercise a lot, but strength training and cardio strength. And then I added reformer in early summer last year. And it just gives you a different type of strength. It's
elongates
incredible.
You as well. I've been doing it for about 14 years and it just gives you better legs. It gives you, if you want a bigger bum, it gives you a bigger bum. If you want a smaller, it gives you a smaller. It works with the individual physiology, which makes it. And I think my bad backs run in my family and I had some problems, but I think it probably delayed my back operation by about 15 years.
I would recommend going on a YouTube and looking up Boho Beautiful Pilates and ignoring the fact that they're in Nicaragua and like with the amazing backdrop, but it's just very good 15-minute classes if you haven't quite got the time to get to a Pilates reformer. Boho Beautiful is worth looking up.
Mm.
Like me, you've interviewed some truly fascinating men and women. Can you both give us your absolute favourite tip that a guest has given you about anything at all?
One of my favourite podcasts that we did was with a woman called Eve Rodsky. She is unbelievably intuitive. And she basically, on her second maternity leave as a lawyer, was sitting breastfeeding her baby. Her husband texted saying, "Where's the mozzarella?" She said, "Oh, I haven't had time to get it." And he basically implied that he was a bit disappointed in this. And she set up a movement from that moment about fair play, working equally in the home. And she's a kind of amazing figure. And her podcast we did with her was just so inspiring because it's all about, well, a lot of it was about obviously connection and working out, but it's just about unapologetically be yourself. So I'm a big fan of Eve Rodsky's.
And the other guest I think we have to mention is Mandy Salagari, don't you, Emily?
Yes, absolutely.
Just really listen to the podcast. She's a remarkable person. She's been through cancer. She is a specialist in addiction, but a specialist in all other things, relationships, particularly relationship with yourself. She's remarkable, brutal when she needs to be, gentle, so gentle a lot of the time.
Yeah. We'll link into both of those. And that maybe answers my next question. I'm going to throw it in quickly anyway. Can you both name check a woman you really admire? Just one name, besides family.
Emily.
Just about to say Annabelle.
We live in very close proximity. She's my hero. I see her for every colour of her rainbow. Aww. And my friends are my heroes. I don't need movie stars and prime ministers.
Love it, love it.
Thank you so much to both of you. Honestly, brilliant chat. Love your honesty. Love all the tips you've given. So together, Annabelle and Emily write a column in the Sunday Telegraph magazine, and Annabelle has a column in the Evening Standard's ES magazine. You can find Annabelle and Emily on socials at Annabelle Rivkin and at Emily McMeekin. That's Emily spelt IE at the end. Plus there's at The Midults, which has its own Insta feed. Do also check out the I'm Absolutely Fine podcast. It's on a little break at the moment, but there's a brilliant back catalogue to scroll back on. And The Midult online platform can be found at themidult.com.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Great.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com, and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.